Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. آمين.
Trying to do things their own way, but everything you see, touch, smell, those are things that tell you words to think twice before you step on your advice. Make sure your words hold true, cause people hold you to your words that make people and people that make the world go round. Words make people. Check out the words that make your world. If your words are jive, then jive you are. Cause those type of words, they don't go far. Think and start, word can buy. From ideas deep in your mind, it's words that make people and people that make the world go round. Words make people. Check out the words that make your mind.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Words Make People. I'm your host, Michael Sahir, here, along with my co-host today, Brother Mustafa Abdullah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Are you with us? Alaikum assalam, sir. How you doing today?
Oh, praise be to Allah. Doing great, brother. Man, doing great.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the weekend school. Enjoyed the weekend school this morning with the kids and having a great time.
Very good. Alhamdulillah. Praise be to God. I think we have with us Sister Sabrina.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam, Sister Sabrina. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, alhamdulillah. So we have a very exciting show today. Here shortly we should have on our special guest, which is Dr. Derek Barber King. Dr. Derek King, he is the nephew of the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King, and we can have a well-rounded discussion with him shortly into our program. And you know, this is Words Make People, and we always begin our show with the conversation around the Quran. You know, we are speaking about the word and word making people, and we know that the best word for making people is the word of God, the Holy Quran. And so we want to read a verse from the Quran. This is how we always begin our program, Words Make People. And today, we have decided to read from chapter 49, and I believe it's verse 13. So we're going to, for those who are going to look up that verse, we'll give a moment's time for those who may want to go and get their Quran and find that verse, chapter 49, verse 13, and we will read it in the Arabic, because that's always important. And then we'll read it also in the English, two or three translations in the English, God willing. So before reading the Quran, we always seek God's protection. And we say in the Arabic, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. And I put two phrases together. The first one, A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, is us seeking protection with God from Satan, the rejected enemy. And the second part I mentioned was the words, bismillahir rahmanir rahim, which means with the name of God, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. And that second phrase is at the beginning of every chapter of the Quran, except for chapter number 9. And so that's our reading before we go into the reciting of the Quran. And Surah 29:13, it reads in Arabic, Ya ayyuha nasu in khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha wa ja'alnakum shu'aban wa qabila lita'arafu inna akramakum inda allaha ayyakum inna allahu alimun khabir. And the most popular translation we have in English is the Yusuf Ali translation. And that reads, O mankind, we created you from a single pair of a male and a female and made you into nations and tribes that you may know each other. Verily, the most honored of you in the sight of God is he or she who is the most righteous of you. And God has full knowledge and is well acquainted with all things. And that is the Yusuf Ali translation. And the Muhammad Asad translation reads, O men, behold, we have created you out of a male and a female and made you into nations and tribes so that you might come to know one another. Verily, the noblest of you in the sight of God is the one who is most deeply conscious of him. Behold, God is all-knowing, all-aware. Alhamdulillah, those are two of the translations that we have here from the Holy Quran for that reading, and it is referring to how Allah is telling mankind that we all came from the same source of a male and a female, one set of a male and a female, and from those two came a multitude of nations and tribes. It says the words. One word it says, "Shuban," which they translate as nations. And when you look at that word, "Shuban," so the Muslims also get other words in that same root. You know, we have the month after Ramadan called the month of Shaban, right? And then we have, also from that same word, it's like a tree trunk, but when it branches out, the different branches to go in various directions. The word also, Shuban, is also tied into the concept of branching or branching out. So from this male and the female, we get the idea of the human family branching out. So we all go back to that one source of a male and a female. And then also the other word talks about the tribes, Kabbalah. It's also Tabah Allah. It's also speaking of tribes. Those that came before you, it's also a reference that it is pointing to. But the concept that we're looking at here is that we come from one source. They expand out in the tribes and nations. But then Allah makes it plain the reason for us going in to be tribes and nations is not that we are special in these tribes, but that we are to get to know each other. And that word in Arabic, lit-ta'arafu, the word arafu is saying to get to know. It also is saying to get acquainted with and to get to know each other. So our tribes and our nations do not make us special or better than another tribe or nation. Our tribes and nations are to us from Allah, but we are required to now, from our tribe or nation, or my situation, to get to know yours, and your tribe get to know mine. And also the word arafu, we also get from the root word Arafat. And we know the Muslims go on Hajj, that Arafat is where all the nations of the world come together. We have people from every nation, race, ethnicity, background coming together for the Hajj. And the best part or the climax of the Hajj is Arafat. And Arafat is so serious, it's so important on the Hajj that if you miss Arafat, even though you met all the other rituals, but if you miss Arafat, you miss the whole Hajj. That's how important Arafat is. Come from the same good words, Arafu, which means to get to know each other. So the Hajj is bringing us together to get to know each other. Likewise, you can miss all the other rituals. You can miss going to the Valley of Muzdalifah. You can miss going to Camp Mina. You can miss even going to Mecca to go around the seven circuits around the Kaaba. You miss all that, but you still make it into Arafat, then your whole Hajj can be counted. So the message that I'm getting from this, Sabrina, is that God wants us to not get tied up in our bloodlines, our national lines, but God wants us to get out and to expose ourselves, to get to know each other, to get to know other people, to share what we have from my experience with those of another experience. So we are thankful to Almighty God for this blessing here of this verse that God made us to know each other. But it doesn't stop there. You know, we could also see this as people of faith across the faith lines. We should not get hung up and think that I have to remain Muslims only, that we have to come out from our own situation and get to know our Christian brothers and sisters, our Jewish brothers and sisters, the Hindus, the Sikhs, get to know each other. Not that we're going to change who we are. Getting to know the others will expand who we are. Brother Mustafa, does Sabrina have any comments you want to share on that reading?
No, sir, Brother Emil. I think you touched every point on it. You know, some good information. I'm glad we chose that ayat to expand upon going into our conversation today.
Yes, sir. Sabrina?
I agree. I think that everything was highlighted well, conduct and getting to know one another. We are in Indiana, and right now we are, as well as the rest of the sports world, as well as the United States sports world are coming up on Super Bowl next weekend, and we're hearing a lot about the Deflategate. So right here in this surah, it also relates where it talks about conduct. Not that the game would change. Here in Indiana, we understand that we lost the game, but protecting the integrity of the game and following the rules says a lot about sportsmanship and conduct in getting to your win.
Right.
So
right.
Here is another example about how conduct is so very important.
Yes, ma'am. But because the part of the verse also says, in that Rahmakum Adinalahu Adkadkum, in which is saying that though we came from nations and tribes, the nations and tribes don't make us better. He said what makes us better is our conduct in the eyesight of God. That is what makes us better, is our conduct in the eyesight of God. And once we have that, then we have the guiding principles that will keep us from doing, be it in sports, I guess, be it in life in general, once we realize that how we are seen in the sight of God is important to us, and that's how we will live our lives. And that's very important. And so, but it's also, and I'm reiterating now, I want to bring us back to a God consciousness in the sense of how do we relate to other people. You know, how are we to live our lives in connection with those outside of our situation? What do we have in common with other people? Because the Holy Quran calls us to come together on common terms. So we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we will have with us our guest, Dr. Derek King. He is the nephew, of course, of the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King. And I think we're going to have a very good conversation today, I do believe. And we are looking forward to hearing from him. He has a lot to share, a lot of history to share with us. He's going to talk about some things from the past and also some things of what's going on now. So you're listening to Words Made People. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Derek King. At this time here, we will listen to a short song about Kool and the Gang. It's their version of Marvin Gaye's song, What's Going On, but they titled their song, What's Happening, Brother. We'll be right back.
What's happening, brother?
Well, welcome back to Words Made People. This is your host. I'd like to start here with my wonderful co-host, Sister Sabrina.
Assalamu alaikum.
And Brother Mustafa Abdullah.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum to our listening audience.
Yes, sir. And at this time, it is my pleasure and honor to welcome to our show Dr. Derek Barber King. He is life, you know, where he's living here in Indianapolis the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years. But I'll let him share that with us. Dr. Derek King, welcome to Words Made People.
Bless you, my brother. Co-host, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, yes, sir. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I guess I'm somewhat busy myself. I'm doing double duty today. For those who know, I am a firefighter for the city of Indianapolis. So if you hear some funny noise in the background and you hear my co-host take over, you know what has happened. I'm going to try to serve. But Dr. King, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. Before we get into our conversation, if you would be so kind, and guess share with us a little bit about yourself. You know, what are you doing now in education? What are you doing now as far as your religious life or in the field of religion, I should say? But just give us a little update as to what's going on now with you.
Well, first, I'll give all thanks to God for making this possible for us to have this conversation.
Amen.
I do want to take a detour for a minute. And first, through the passion of patriotism, the men and women who serve this country and our armed forces are always giving gratitude for their service. But there are some other servants, and as I said to you, Brother Michael, as a fireman, I appreciate your service. So,
yeah, thank you.
We hope you'll be able to stay with us for the rest of the conversation. One other thing,
yes,
I want to say is I was listening quietly in the background to the conversation that preluded this conversation. The teaching was enriching and encouraging, and I just would add to the comments about conduct. One other thing I'd say that if we became more exemplary in our love for God and our love for humanity, it would influence our conduct. So
yes,
that was just my little bit to throw on that conversation. But I've been in Indianapolis since 1999. I guess I'm a transplanted Hoosier by now. associate professor of religious studies at Martin University here in Indianapolis. Been there for 14 years. I do have some demand on me to carry the message of love, nonviolence, human justice. In the spirit of my uncle, I do a little bit of traveling. I'm a Christian minister by profession. Got two sons. One of them lives in Indianapolis with me, and the other one is in school in Georgia. And,
yes, sir.
I try to serve the community as a spokesman, an advocate. I stand on the side of right, and I disdain injustice. So that's pretty much me.
Yes, sir. Well, that's quite a bit. That's quite a bit. Because you said you should disdain injustice, then you are working 24/7. Because I thought you said that you have a disdain for injustice. I'm sorry.
For injustice, and I'm working 24/7 for justice.
For justice. Okay, yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, now your family, you have a long history in the civil rights. You may know of your uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but also there are others in your family, as you just mentioned, about your own self, you know, that you are still working in that spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King. But also that your father, he was active in the civil rights too, correct?
Absolutely.
So go ahead.
And as a footnote for the listening audience, if you'd like to know more about my father, A.D. King, we do have a foundation that we created some years ago to celebrate him and highlight his work. It's called the A.D. King Foundation. You can check us out on the web, A.D. King Foundation.
A.D. King Foundation. Yes, sir.
Brother Emel.
Yes.
Brother Emel, I hate to interrupt, but the kids are so excited here at the weekend school, and I know it's kind of off the subject, but they was wondering, they so excited because Dr. King sounded like his uncle, and they was wondering if one day, perchance, they meet him. They're excited just to hear his voice. They just watched Selma the other day, so they're kind of excited about hearing him on the radio show.
Is it local?
Yes.
Is the school
yes,
local?
Yes, sir.
Well, the weekend school here at the Mass Gym.
Well, let me contact me at Martin University. Call my office, 917-3348. Leave me a message. And we will get on that tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
I'd love to come visit.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yes, yes, the school in Moore University, which by the way is named after his uncle, but also where he lives is not far from the masthead either, so that should be fairly easy to take place.
Yes, sir.
Tell the children, thank you for listening in to the radio show.
Yes, sir. Brother Emel said, thank you, Almina and Khadid and Kareem, for listening in at the show. And Dr. King said he's going to make that happen when y'all can meet him. They're so excited. Alhamdulillah.
Praise be to God. Yes, sir. Now, your father, A.D. King, does the A and the D stand? I'm sure it does. It says what? Alfred King?
Well, he was named after his paternal grandfather, Alfred Daniel Williams. His full name was A.D. Williams King, so he was named after his paternal grandfather, Daniel Williams.
Yes,
and
sir.
My paternal grandfather was active in protest before the emergence of the civil rights movement as we know it. Great-granddaddy A.D. didn't back down from prejudice. He didn't back down from prejudice either. So I'm fourth-generation preacher, so fighting is deep in my DNA.
All right. Okay. Good. Very good. And also, you mentioned about the name, just a little, not a little, because this is all, to me, very important, that before Dr. Martin Luther King, before Martin King, he was Michael King, correct?
Michael King. That's correct.
So how did the name change take place from being Michael King to Martin Luther King?
I'm not clear. I've been meaning to do this for years. Sit down with my Aunt Christine, but somebody got passioned by the work of Martin Luther, and that had some influence on the name change.
So now this is the Martin Luther from Germany back in the 1500s?
Yeah, the German reformer.
Okay, very good. So I guess we all have our homework assignment. Now we can go and find out more about Martin Luther from Germany from the 1500s, yeah, and what influence that had upon Dr. King. And you just learned from Michael to Martin. Very good.
Yes.
Very, very good. So tell us more about your father. What was his work in Louisville, Kentucky? I understand that he was instrumental in ending housing desegregation.
Yes.
Louisville?
Yes. See, one of the successes of the civil rights movement was the protest in Birmingham, Alabama, which resulted in the establishment of the Desegregation of Public Accommodations Act. There's a little known fact that's coming out now. One of the most influential protests in Birmingham was done by children. When we see the images of water hoses, the dogs, and the billy clubs, those were public school age children. A lot of people immediately think that those were adults. That's a story in itself that's finally being told. On the strength of the children's protest in Birmingham, when my father confronted segregation in housing, what he did was brought children together in Louisville, Kentucky, I was one of those children.
Mm-hmm.
I went to jail at 13. And that's part of my story when I talk to young people. I went to jail at 13, not for committing a crime. I went to jail at 13 to try to make a difference. And our children today are endearing themselves to violence and going to jail as a status symbol. But my father organized, I think it was about 1,000 of us, and we marched down Broadway in Louisville, Kentucky, and ended up going to jail and stayed in overnight. And out of that protest, pressure was put on Congress in Washington to strike down segregation in housing. So that's
Yes, sir. And this is in Louisville, Kentucky?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and
that happened,
so much history,
I think, in 1966. I'm about to tell my age now.
Okay. That's okay. That's all right. But this is very important because there's so much of our history that's not told, and if we don't tell it, then it won't be told. And if it is told by others, 9 times out of 10, according to history, they always get it wrong. So we have to tell our story. This is very important for us to know that 1,000 youth in 1966, led by your father, walked down Broadway, the street or avenue? Well, Broadway Street.
I think it was probably Broadway Street or Avenue, but they tear gassed us. They weren't as violent with us as they were with the young folks in Birmingham, but they tear gassed us and packed us into the wagon like sardines, and we were in jail singing freedom songs.
So how long were you in jail?
Overnight. Yeah, but see what happened. Mm-hmm. The officers came to us and said, well, you need to call home and tell your parents to bring $100 down here and we'll let you go home. We had been trained how to respond. Say again?
No, go ahead and finish.
We had been trained on how to respond, so we told them, basically, we didn't ask you all to lock us up, so we're not going to call anybody. They went from 100, came back with 75. The last offer was $10. And the reason they needed the money, because they had to feed us.
Okay. I mean, $10 back in 1956 to buy a whole lot of food.
Oh, yeah. But remember, they started out with 100.
Right.
So they would have had a surplus if we had this.
Yeah.
But
it'd be $100,000.
Yeah, but we stood our ground.
Yes, sir. And that triggered laws and legislation changes.
Our protests trickled up, and a law was passed to strike down segregation in housing, and that opened the door to people who look like us to live wherever you can afford to live.
Yeah, then you said.
In the South, the adage was black folks live across the track. That's where all of them are.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I think I heard that a time to myself. Now, this initiated a federal law, or it initiated a change on just
It went federal. It went federal.
Okay. Yes, sir. So you were part of
that. That's why, because of that protest, that's why people here in Indianapolis are not necessarily condoning flight, but they can move from Hallville to Noblesville.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very important. Now, another part of history, too, I want you to speak on, and I think it's important for us to know. In May of 1963, in Gaston, Alabama, there was a hotel room that was intended for your uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King, that was bombed. However, he didn't stay at the hotel that night. He went back to Atlanta. And from the reports that I read, sadly, three people were injured by that blast in Gaston, Alabama. What many people may not know is that on that same night, the home that you were living in with your parents in Birmingham was blown up by those who were dissatisfied with your father being outspoken as well. And now, if I'm correct, you were home that evening when your house was blown up?
Absolutely.
Can you speak to that?
I think that was the blast. The bombing was early in the morning. I think that would have been. It was on a Sunday, early Sunday morning, and my mother was in the living room. And the children, we were back in our rooms, heard this loud thunderous crash. The house shook. My dad hollered, get up, get out. They bombed the house. And in a few more seconds, a blast even bigger than that one happened. And I literally saw my mother and my father flying by my bedroom door with furniture coming behind them.
Whoa, wait a minute. You saw your mother and father from the concussion?
From
being
the concussion,
blown?
Down the hall, past the bedroom.
Down the hall. Mm-hmm.
And what happened, whoever planted the bomb turned it, so the investigation proves that they planted the device where the major concussion went away from the house, because if they had turned it another way, the major concussion would have collapsed the house and killed all of us. So God had a purpose to spare all of us at that time. So, and not that we try to make headlines about it. Much of what my uncle experienced and his family, so did mine. See, in Montgomery, my uncle's house was blown up, too.
Now this is another uncle, right?
Oh, this is Martin. King, his house was bombed in Montgomery.
Okay, I never knew that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, again, much of what my uncle experienced, we did, too. So I guess they had targets on all of the kings, but as what happened with us, everybody survived.
Yes. Yes. You know, and the prices that have been paid. You mentioned a minute ago how you speak to the young guys, maybe girls too, going to jail as a status symbol. How do we reach them? How do we connect with the youth? What do you say to them to get them to see that there's a higher purpose for them in their lives, more than just a status symbol?
Well, the first, in my opinion, the first thing we need to do is get to know them. We really don't know a lot of our young people. Just get to know them. Then secondly, we have to have, when I was growing up, four major institutions, societal institutions, had a lot of influence on my behavior and my conduct.
Okay.
The home, the school, the church, and the community at large. All four of those social institutions were reinforcing the same messages about conduct and behavior.
Okay.
If I got in trouble at school, we had something back then. A lot of people are against it, but I put it like this. I was raised. I wasn't parented. The whole... Hillary Clinton was given credit for an African proverb that people thought she was so genius when she kept advocating it takes a village to raise the child. The home, the school, the church, and the community was the village that raised me.
Mm-hmm.
We have areas of what I call avenues of escape that young people have chosen to move away from instruction at home, school, church, and the larger community. We have disconnected those four institutions, and we got to reconnect them. And all four of those institutions need to be saying the same thing to young people. Conduct.
That's true.
And behavior. We had something called home training. You knew how to act outside the home when you went to school, home, and where you worship. We all were saying, they all were saying the same thing.
Yes, sir.
And we got to reconnect them. That's that. And we still got to advocate nonviolence, love for yourself, and love for everything God has created. You shouldn't destroy anything. You shouldn't destroy something you had nothing to do with making.
Yes, sir. Yes, very much true. So when you talk to the youth, do they do they listen to you? I mean, by you being the nephew or Dr. King, do they pay heed to it?
Oh, absolutely. One thing I want to say is one thing our children are very they are becoming visual learners.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is a great teaching tool. There are some videos, short videos that I got to put in your hand, Michael, and then you can help me disseminate some of this material.
Okay, sure.
Our young people are our greatest asset and resource, and the enemy has found one of the things that happened in the Israel's history is they were being formed as a nation and a race by God. They had a captivity incident when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, went back to Jerusalem and carried out a great number of Hebrew children, took them down to Babylon, worked on them psychologically, and tried to assimilate them. See, what Nebuchadnezzar figured out and the enemy is doing it to our young people. Now, if you want to wipe a race out culturally, you don't destroy the old people. You go get the children. And there's a satanic move, from my perspective, to keep black folks in America neutralized. And the way to do it is to keep the children messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Well, please get that material to me, because we need to reach our youth in every way that we can. I wanted to tie in on a comment that you shared. You said even though it was less known, pretty much everything that Dr. Martin Luther King's family went through, that your family or your father, A.D. King, and your siblings went through the same thing. And if it's okay with you, about a year, a little over a year after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, that your father passed away as well. And there seems to be some inconclusive thoughts regarding his passing. And it may be, I don't know, so that I'm asking you, that his passing may not have been just a natural passing, if you say that he drowned, but he was known to be a very good swimmer, from what I read from what your sister said.
What
comment on that?
This was July the 21st, 1969. We had a swimming pool. The 21st of July, 1969, was my brother's 17th birthday. I had wakened early in the morning, and my bed was close to the window that I could look out of and look at the pool. Now, I'm 15, and I look in the pool, and I see a body in the pool, not moving.
Mm-hmm.
So my immediate thought was, well, it's my brother's birthday. Maybe he got up and gone swimming. So I looked over. My brother was still asleep. So immediately I said, that's Dad. So I ran downstairs, jumped in the pool, and he was at the bottom of the pool, doubled up in the fetal position. So I went back in the house, called my mother, and my baby brother and my sister were in the Bahamas. So that left my brother and my older sister had gone to work. So I forgot who I called first, but I called, and then that's when all of the responding started. So by the time the first responders got there and pulled up, pulled my dad out of the pool, like I say, he was doubled up in the fetal position. He had some bruises around his abdomen. And then when they got him up, one of the responders said, he was dead before he hit the water. There's no water in his lungs. I said, what? Then they rushed me off. And they rushed me off. And back then, we didn't have the technology we have now. His autopsy report was handwritten. And it said accidental drowning. That was his cause of death, but I know what I saw and I know what I heard. So my grandfather was still grieving the loss of my uncle. Then here comes his dad, and my grandfather just said, we just not going to pursue this. He's dead, and nothing we can do can bring him back. So we kind of, as a family, agreed to just grieve, heal, and move on. But the speculation is that he did not drown. We don't know per the autopsy.
Right. So now
we know
go ahead.
All we know is they say he drowned. But
yes, sir. So now there, so from the time of the assassination of your uncle to the passing of your father, we're talking about 15 months, 1 year and 3 months.
Yep.
Yes.
And see, my daddy was just as, in his own right, just as charismatic as his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And we do speculate that see, one thing, if Dr. King had lived and made it to August of 1968, they had planned a major campaign that would have impacted the economy of the United States. And that, more than anything, probably got him killed and my daddy in succession. And the whole SCLC think tank were trying to figure out a way to impact the economy. So, as America does, it will produce great people and then turn around and kill some of them.
Now, some have said that they think that your uncle speaking out on international concerns was a factor. As long as he was domestic, they could kind of put up with it. You know, okay, he's going for his civil rights, and that's okay. But when he went outside of the USA, began to point a critical finger at Vietnam and other international concerns, then they felt like, well, he's getting a little bit too big for his britches, so to speak.
Oh, absolutely, because he had addressed apartheid in South Africa. That wasn't popular. So, again, you know, when you start talking about money, major money in America, some people who got it and get it by ill-begotten means get a little uncomfortable.
Yes, sir. And also at this time here, we have a few callers, a number of callers who have called in. If you want to ask our guests a question or offer a comment, just press 1 on your phone, and we will work you into the conversation. And I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned some of the things that I really hadn't known, and that's one thing we're trying to bring out in the show today, is to bring out points of history that may have been overlooked, or maybe, and they, sometimes that's done by intent. People, they were intentionally overlooking important things in history. And one I wanted to mention was the relationship between the civil rights movement and the what's commonly called Black Muslims or the Nation of Islam. And I had shared in the book that I wrote on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that he had given much money to help those in the civil rights. And a lot of people don't know that. And I heard one time he gave $50,000 to Julian Bond, but I did get a chance personally to ask Julian Bond, and he gave him a much lower figure, which was at $3,000. So
that was a lot of money still back then.
That's true too. But I heard from two Muslims who were present, they said it was in the tens of thousands. But either way, the point being is that the relationships between the two communities were not as far apart as it seems. So what comments or thoughts do you have?
As it was perpetrated.
Okay.
As the media perpetrated it.
Yes,
and
sir.
By the way, I did get the book, did get your book, Michael, and did my required reading. And to your listening audience, if you haven't gotten email Sahir's book, The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, The Man Behind the Men, I recommend it to you highly. It dispels a lot of the myths about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, some of his affiliations, associations. And one of the big ones is now that we do have the Internet, people can go online, do the Google, and see images of Dr. King meeting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X. Now,
yes, sir.
As I said to you, Michael, and I say this to your listening audience, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was on target with the concept of a nation within a nation. I didn't go this far with you, Michael, but everybody else in America has done it.
Yes,
all the other ethnic groups have a sense of nationalism, respect to who they are as a as a culture. We don't.
Yes, sir.
Not like we should. Not like we should. We should have listened to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on Black nationalism. We didn't. I said if we still learn to listen to him as an economist, he was absolutely correct. We need to control the destiny of our dollars because we do, Black folk in America do make money, pretty good little bit of it, and we still have mastered the destiny of our dollars yet. And that's what, in my opinion, that's what Honorable Elijah Muhammad was trying to teach us.
Yes, sir. What do you know of, have a good source on the conversations between Dr. Martin Luther King and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what other information do you have on any relationship between these two great men?
Well, one of the things that both of them understood was the, I call it, the culture of their crisis. In the South, what Dr. King was up against was segregation and racism.
Okay.
In the North, in Chicago, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was dealing with was the disparity in the distribution of the wealth as it affected black folk. Both of them were dealing with injustices, but they were dealing with a different culture of injustice. They both wanted the same thing for black folks in America, that the playing field become level.
Mm-hmm.
There are some noble words in the Constitution. All men are created equal. Well, first, black folks in America constitutionally are still not defined as whole people.
Mm-hmm.
And the two leaders were dealing with a cultural crisis of a different nature that affected black folks. And they both men wanted the same thing for black folks in America. You said that we are equal, then let's level the playing field.
Well, go ahead.
And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was dealing with it economically. And Dr. King was trying to deal with it politically. But both of them saw value in each one of them's protests. They respected each other.
Yes, sir.
It was no gulf between them.
Yeah. This movie, and I'm going to emphasize movie, entitled Selma, is not a documentary. But I did go see the movie, me and my wife, and we both enjoyed the movie. But I'm constantly reminded that it was a movie and not a documentary. But it do show a scene in the movie of Dr. King meeting with, Coretta Scott King meeting with Malcolm X. And that did happen in real life. But there were other, now in the movie, they show Dr. King being dissatisfied with Malcolm X. But in real life, we see a different perspective that he had, the both men had a lot of respect for each other. Can you speak to that, please? And also, their two wives and their daughters as well.
Well, I can't put my finger on it, but I can sum this up. In one of the conversations, one of the interviews that was done with Malcolm X, I'm paraphrasing.
Yes, sir.
He basically said, Dr. King and I want the same thing for our people.
Mm-hmm.
I respect Dr. King, but I disagree with his method of protest when it involves women and children. That's
mm-hmm.
He said he disagreed with that. But then he followed it up to say, I will say this to you. If I was you all, I would deal with Dr. King because I'm the man y'all don't want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's a myth associated with the Nation of Islam that the brothers and sisters in the nation are violent people. No, they're not. No, they're not. Some of the most peaceful people on the planet. Now, there was a relationship between Sister Chavez and Mrs. King. At one time, they were touring the country together as sisters. I think they called it something like the Sisterhood Tour or something.
Right. Now, just for clarity, these are the widows of Malcolm X and the widow of Dr. King. Those two.
Yeah, they were two.
Okay. Go ahead.
They toured the country together. Then Yolanda King and Adela Shabazz, because both of them were in the arts. Both of them toured the country with a stage play. Because Yolanda's gone now, and I haven't kept up with Adela, but there was no distance, no gulf, no disconnect between the King and the Shabazzes.
Yes, sir.
Anybody
yes,
love that opinion? That is a myth.
Well, let me ask you this also, because the media, and this is the season between January and February, they always show Dr. King, and they tend to only show a side of him that is appears to be meek and passive. But I'm going to take you play a clip. I'm going to play two clips. It'll be about a minute each. And one is titled "The Dr. King That Mainstream Media Doesn't Want You to Hear." So what I do, I'll play these two clips here, and then I will come back for let me play one, and then we'll come back for your comments. This is a short clip of Dr. Martin Luther King.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, "Yes, I'm black. I'm proud of it. I'm black and beautiful."
Yes, sir. Yeah, now that was the first clip. Very few of us hear that tenor of voice and message being publicized by the main media of Dr. King. So, Dr. Derrick King, the nephew, what comments did you have to share on that last clip?
To me, that's vintage Martin Luther King Jr. like I say to people, he's more than the "I Have a Dream" speech. There was a controlled, radical militancy in the man. he certainly affirmed our blackness. He has, on more than one occasion, encouraged us to take control of our own destiny. One of his most notable quotes is he said, "A man can't ride your back unless it's bent. Stand up, straighten up." Of course, we know our the majority of our broadcast medias are controlled by white folks, and when people are dealing with oppression, one of the first things an oppressor does to the oppressed is control the information they get and minimize their ability to, choose. So, So like I say, that's vintage.
Yeah, and I guess to and that's the advantage, I'm sure, of being part of the family, that you would have heard this speech is that, or just commentary around the dinner table, just around the family, that the people in the public don't know. But you use two descriptions of Blanco that they caught my attention. And you said they were controlled, but you said radical and militant. But they were controlled. And see, I'm not trying to promote my book per se, but in my book, I described Dr. King and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as being two peas in the pod, or you might say good cop and bad cop. But they still were trying to arrest or bring to an end the racism and the suffering of our people. They just had different methods and methodologies of going after the same thing. But what Dr. King may have his rage even. He was always containing his rage and advising us to contain our rage because that would be the most effective means. But still, and I'm glad to hear you say that, he had controlled rage and controlled a militant makeup, and that's very important for us to share. Let me share this next thing. Go ahead, please.
See, there's a way. What Dr. King chose to do was to teach black folks how to retaliate. He taught us how to retaliate, but the way he taught us to retaliate was not with the sword. Not with the sword. Retaliate with the spirit, not with the sword.
So can you give us a little bit more on that, please?
See, fast forward and up to this present day. The incident, well, the one that was the major catalyst, the incident with Michael Brown out there in Ferguson. There
were
two responses to what has been described as an injustice. Two responses. One of them was retaliatory, which the media flooded us with, the outrage of the folks in Ferguson who chose to retaliate by rioting and looting. But then there was another side of the response which took to the streets and raised their voice in peaceful protest. See, sometimes when people get angry and their response turns into retaliation, they destroy property. Now, the convenience store, they tore up the convenience store not realizing that you just destroy the resource that you need.
Right.
So what Dr. King was trying to say, if you don't like something, raise your voice, and then if you have to, present your body, but don't try to fight violence with violence, because nobody will win. And I say this even right here in Indianapolis. Indianapolis chose to rise up and raise his voice in protest and disgust and want to destroy some property. Try to go up there, and we saw a little incident, which that little skirmish, major skirmish in Castleton Square Mall. But if they knew, if they know the black folks are coming up to the Castleton to tear stuff up, they'll have the National Guard out there on 82nd Street on with the order to shoot to kill.
That's right. So, that's right. Yes. We were listening to the second clip, and I do want to let people know you're listening to Words Made People. And we are on the blog talk station called Station IWDM. And we thank Brother Khalid Islam for being the main host for the station. And we also encourage our callers, if you want to ask a comment of our guest, Dr. Derek King, you can press 1 on your phone for any questions or comments you have. At this point here, we're going to listen to this one-minute clip by Dr. King on economic justice. And let me just say he is really outlining how, I guess today we call it white privilege. White privilege, where due to person being Caucasian, they were given benefits that people of color were not given. So we're listening to Dr. King on economic justice.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Yeah, that is a 1 minute, well, a minute 15-second snippet, I admit, from Dr. King on economic justice. Dr. Derek King, what are your comments on that piece?
Again, send it. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes,
let's fast forward up to 2014.
Okay, 15. Yes, sir.
2015, I'm sorry, 2015.
All
and
right.
If we pay attention as it relates to the economy that is generated by agriculture in the United States, at one time there were black folks all over the South who had major acreage.
That's right.
And the federal government, when it came, when a black farmer came victim of a natural disaster and tried to get some subsidy money to keep the farm going, the government would not give them the subsidy, and consequently, if they couldn't generate the revenue to keep the farm, the federal government seized the farmland. That goes on in America to this day. Now, when he mentioned going to Washington to get the check,
right,
a lot of folks thinking that because Barack Obama is the president of the United States, that the check is good. Dr. King said that they wrote us a check. We went to get the check, but when they wrote the check, it came back marked insufficient funds.
That's right.
Black folks and some black folks in America think the check is good based on Barack Obama being the president. My dear friends, if that is your position, the check still is not good. All that happened with Barack Obama being elected president, maybe a small deposit was put in the account, but the check still ain't no good.
Yeah, okay. So we're facing some of the same things today. But I thought it was quite interesting to hear Dr. King speak on economics, because once again, the media has painted a picture of him that is not complete. He was a holistic man. He was well-rounded and concerned, informed and concerned with the totality of the needs of our people. Some may disagree with his methods. Some may disagree with his methods, but still his attention, his focus was on the whole picture of our African-American lives.
Well, Dr. King dealt with the condition of black folks in America in many contexts. He saw us being violated politically. He saw us being violated economically. He saw us being violated in the realm of education. One of his majors in college was political science. He studied the Constitution. So, and again, if he had lived to August of 1968, the civil rights machine was going to convene in Washington, D.C., and confront the federal government with the disparity in how black folks were getting paid and poor folks, not only black folks, but poor folks. Dr. King advocated for black folks and poor folks in America. It was called the Poor People's Campaign. And if they had pulled that off, America would not be the same.
Yes, sir. Well, now, August of 68 just kind of put things in perspective on the timeline. August, you're 3 months away from a presidential election. Johnson is coming to the end of his term. So what kind of effect may they have had upon, or was that calculated, to be a factor for the November election?
Well, let me offer this to you. One of the things my grandfather said in his wisdom, at that time, James Earl Ray was the alleged assassin. But my grandfather took people's thinking to another level, those who heard him. He said, they want to say James Earl Ray pulled the trigger, but it's bigger than James Earl Ray. But you got to try to figure out how many other fingers were on the trigger.
Now, your cousin, which is Dr. King's sons, I'm not sure which one was a Dexter or not, but they met with James Earl Ray before he passed. And according to the news reports, if you help us out, but according to the news reports, they accepted James Earl Ray's words saying that he did not kill Dr. King.
Do you have any comments on that?
That was Dexter. Dexter.
Okay, went. Dexter.
Dexter went, visited him at prison in, I think he was in prison in Tennessee, and asked him, did you shoot my father? And James Earl Ray said, no, it didn't. And Dexter said, I believe him. And, but the only thing, see, it might happen in our lifetime, but I doubt it. There are some disclosures that the United States and the world needs to be made privy to about the assassination plot of President Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Right now, there are some people who are still alive who, if full disclosure became public, there are some people who go to jail. Some people are still being protected now. So we'll never know the truth, I don't think, during our lifetime.
Yes, sir. Yeah, well, but I thought that was quite interesting that that did take place with the visit with James Earl Ray. And as you say, the timing of it, you know, and I'm interjecting the point about the election, which was November, which would be the main election for the next president. How would that have factored in for what Dr. King in the energy and the movement of people he had the power to bring to Washington D.C. at that time? I think it would have been quite interesting, but I do want to interject. As with Dexter King, the son of Martin Luther King, visiting James Earl Ray. Now that I leave an email, whilst Muhammad, he also visited with some of the gentlemen who were behind bars for the killing of Malcolm X, and they had a very similar conversation. You know, did you kill Malcolm X? And it's been proven quite well that the two of them who done 20-something years each for the killing of Malcolm X, they were nowhere nearby. You know, so we, history is important. These conversations are important as well. So, Brother Mustafa, are you here?
What's up, brother? You know I'm here. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So go ahead and finish the show, and I'll be right back.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Brother Mustafa, I'm still here. This is Sister Sabrina.
Okay.
Dr. King?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell us, as far as Ferguson is concerned, or not tell us, but even shed some light, I think Oprah Winfrey, when they asked her, she said the leadership is what was missing. It was like unguided leadership. Can you speak a little bit about the protests that we're seeing today among the youth and better maybe leadership, better nonviolence tactics, or just your overall opinion about some of the protests?
Well, first thing, I appreciate the question. From my position and perspective, the young people are showing us that they do care. That's the first thing, for them to come out shows that they do care. Now, certainly their conduct in some regard is not lawful. What we got to do is go back, reach into the spirits of our young people, and try to persuade them that violence is not the answer. But we have to convince them that the benefit of protesting. We have to convince them that there is a benefit in protesting nonviolently. See, one of the things that I say to young people is you have to take responsibility for your individual future. Some of your choices can end up affecting you. And that's for all of us. Some of our choices affect us for the rest of our lives. And once the justice system puts an arrest and a conviction on the record of young people and any citizen, if there's an interest to try to make an honest living, they are impacted by an impediment called a criminal conviction. And short answer is we first got to get to know these young people. Again, that's get to know them and show them the benefit of some alternative choices. And one of the things we got to teach them how to become less reactive and better and better at responding. Right now they just do too much impulse reaction. They are not thinking.
Yes, sir.
They're acting out of emotion, anger, rage, disappointment. And we got to show them that we care.
Could you elaborate on that a little more? Earlier in the conversation, you talked about how you went to jail as a child, one. And secondly, you mentioned that you all were prepared to some of the questions. And then I imagine you also were prepared on what would happen if you were going to jail. I remember over the King holiday, I was watching someone had interviewed Congressman, Honorable Congressman John Lewis, and he said in his backpack that you see when he was on the ground, he said he had, I think he said two pieces of fruit, maybe an apple and an orange, and he had a book. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, the preparation that those before you prepared you, as opposed to some of the behaviors that we're seeing? Maybe, you know, the youth can hear and learn a little bit from that.
Literally, see, one of the things I say to people is look, when they look at the footage of the Civil Rights Movement, first see that even though there, it was not a majority present, but there were some white folks who got victimized and brutalized by people of their own race. One of the first fatalities in the Civil Rights Movement was a white woman out of New York. When they trained us, they brought white people in. And they would get up in our faces, hollering and screaming, calling us niggas, pushing on us. It was controlled, though, but they saying this is what you will probably experience, and you can't fight back because you might end up getting killed. One of the things that will help our young people is, in my opinion, have some real-life scenarios that involve people in uniform. One of the things that our young people have, in my opinion, a misguided understanding of who people are in law enforcement. A lot of them, when they deal with people who wear the badge and carry the gun, they want to try to assault them. And we got to get, now the police got their part to do too. But we got to first get our young people to understand that as long as they live in America, they're going to have to deal with people who wear badges and carry guns.
Yes, sir.
And learn how to deal with them rather than be confrontational and aggressive with them. But again, we got to work with young people on some of their choices. Now, if you have to get them to understand, if you break the law and the police come, they have a job to do. And if you don't want the police to do their job, don't break the law.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So,
No, sir. I was just going to say that I imagine if you're in the wrong, you know, that's not a time to be trying to state your point or justify, you know, wrongdoing. So, I think that was a very important point.
And see, one of the things that I say, I'm willing to engage anybody in conversation and dialogue. There are some parents who are allowing children to live in their homes, knowing these children, teenagers, don't have a job, don't have dental insurance, but got a $10,000 mouth.
Yes, sir. It's true, yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Think about it. No, they don't have a job. No, they don't have dental insurance. Don't have any automobile insurance, and got a pimped out Delta 88 sitting out in front of the house. And then, no, they don't have a job. Don't have a discount relationship with Walmart or Best Buy. And I broke you off with a 52-inch flat-screen TV.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
And keeping you high. See, my parents, and I say it, I'm transparent, my father drank, but my father, and he being a preacher, he was a preacher, he drank, but my father didn't drink with his children.
Yes, sir.
Exactly.
See, children all be your children and not your friends.
Yes, sir.
You find it often.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying you find that often in a lot of homes today where parents try to befriend the children and do all these activities with the children and still want the respect. And the child ain't going to respect you if you continue to drink and party with them, you know, and hold them as friends. We do have a couple of callers on hold here, Doctor. We got a caller from 717 area code. If you push 1, then we can get your question in or comment that you might have for Dr. Derrick King. 717 area code. Question or comment?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just listening in, and maybe I hit the number 1 by mistake. But my name is Elamine Rockman. I've been listening in, and I would like this a very interesting and enlightening interview here. But I would like to know when were those two clips of Dr. King's speech were made.
Now, I think Imam Sahir found those clips. You might have to try to get a hold of him and see where he got them from.
Oh, okay.
And he is the resident Imam of Nurala Islamic Center. You can contact him on Facebook or I imagine through the communications that you have with your local Imam or as an Imam.
Okay. Yes, and another comment now that I'm on here is the comments that I've always had about parenting and associating with their children and wrongdoing, and then realizing after a period of time they the parent is not receiving the amount of respect that they want from their children because of the activities that they participate in together. And another thing that I notice a lot that I don't hear is that our people, the youth and adults, are out doing a lot of wrong on a daily basis. And we always, when we get caught up in something, we always react when we are confronted by the police, and we react like in a manner that we didn't do anything wrong. But we do be doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when we get caught, you know, now we're in a situation where we don't know how this thing is going to play out. So, you know, there's a great level of behavioral responsibility that needs to be addressed, you know, to maybe like eliminate some of the problems that we face. So thank you very much, and, you know, God bless you. Peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Thank you for your comments.
Let me interject this. I said I was about to tell my age. I'll be 61 in April. When I was going, first of all, I went to segregated elementary schools in Birmingham and Atlanta, Georgia. One of the courses they made us take was a course called civics. And in civics, we learned about how government works, but then there was a section in the civics course where they taught us about citizenship, what it means to be a citizen, what your responsibilities are as being a citizen in the United States, and then how you're supposed to be law-abiding. We might need to go back. But see, again, citizenship was reinforced in the home, in the school, in the church, in the community. When I was growing up, the only people who I knew or had an idea that had a gun were policemen, soldiers, and people who hunted. Now, gun presence is everywhere. One thing I'd say, and I should have mentioned this, my sister, when you asked the question,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't hurt us if we started trying to teach young people what it means to be a citizen.
Yes, sir.
And how citizens are to behave and conduct themselves in society.
Mm-hmm.
See,
and because we are familiar with...
There's nothing in jail that's attractive to me. Nothing about jail
that's right.
Attractive to me.
Yes, sir. I don't want to go to find out. I take your word for it. So... For those that haven't been, you know, I thank you. I take your word for it. But from the increasing amount of youth and even adults and repeat offenders that we see, I thank you for bringing that point up. I know that in the school that you, in the university, excuse me, that you work, I'm sure that you share these life lessons with the students as well. So anything that you can continue to share on the show would be great about knowing, you know, your rights, how to conduct yourself as a citizen when you're engaged by an officer, whether you're doing wrong or not. You know, with police, there is protocol that they have to follow as well. And as a citizen, there's a way that you can react to the situation or a way that you can follow up after it has occurred. Can you share with us some things that may save And we keep saying youth, but even as I am older, when I left home and went to college, I found out I needed my parents more because I was using what I had been taught in situations where they weren't around. So any way that you can elaborate on all of those things, being a professor, Dr. King, it would help out tremendously.
Well, I infuse life lessons from the perspective of Derek King in all of my classes at Martin University. And one thing I simply say to people, when an officer shows up, the first thing the citizen does or should do, the first thing you do is follow their command.
Yes,
that's the first thing. If they tell you shut up, shut up. If they tell you
right
go stand over there,
yes,
go stand over there. Now, I do have a message for law enforcement, too. Now,
mm-hmm,
back in the celebrated days of the Wild West, there were people who wore the badge and carried the gun. Sometimes they would call them lawmen, but the other times they would call them peace officers. I would like to see police be trained more to respect people as citizens and not as a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mindset of a lot of people who wear the badge and carry the gun, when they come on the scene, they're not coming to make the peace or establish the peace. They're coming to enforce the law.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said, Dr. King, when they hire these young guys as police officers, you know, fresh out of the Army, 25, 26 years old, they really haven't experienced a lot of life yet. And we know the brain don't develop for most of us young people to 25 to where we can make those conscious decisions and right decisions. So I think, you know, that cutoff age for a police officer is too low because you are able to deal with your society and your environment as you become older. Once you get up, you know, between 35 and 45, you listen to people better. You try to get an understanding of what's going on in their lives. So if you cut that age off of police officers, right, I think the cutoff age might be late 30s or something like that. And so you got these young officers out here trying to deal with a society that they haven't really experienced yet. You know, and you want to go out there, you know, puffing your chest out and bristling up at everybody like you King Kong Almighty, instead of trying to listen and understand what's going on or what the situation is, you know, you let anger take over because you got this badge now, you know. So I think, like you said, if we get more peace officers that's going to try to listen at the citizen and see what's going on, see what the situation is, then we could have better police officers or better peace officers,
oh, yeah,
is what you're saying.
And we would have a much more civil community. I've heard policemen responding to a call cussing the citizen out.
Yes, sir.
Before they can get an understanding.
Yeah. You're supposed to protect and serve. That's what they're supposed to do. But the community and police, we got to work on our relationships with each other because we're not going nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And this one tickles me. I've seen police come on the scene of a passed out drunk on the sidewalk. Now, this person is not combative, not aggressive, can't hardly stand up. The police pat him down, and then the first thing they do is slap the handcuffs on him, talking about this is for your protection and mine. Wait a minute, what kind of threat have I presented myself to you as? They need to learn how to arrest people with dignity.
Yes, sir.
Everybody don't need handcuffs thrown on their wrist.
Dr. King,
that's
do
just
you
some
feel,
of my ramble.
Huh? So do you feel, even in our city, I think that with us being fairly close to Missouri, I think our city has taken some proactive steps in engaging our officers, engaging with the youth. I'm sure we could see more of that. How do we get the youth and get parents of these youth involved? I think one of the things that I saw here at the beginning of the year is a police officer was shot in the foot, and one of the citizens was shooting back at the party that was shooting at the officer, and it wasn't in the best of areas. So it appears that this officer may have been engaged in the community, or that the citizens saw enough of this officer in this area to help in that situation. I'm not saying that is the solution for all situations, but that's one example of where I see care in the community. Are there anything that you could share that could engage, that we could use to engage parents and youth to work with, you know, the officers in the community from all of the nonviolent experience you have?
Well, when I was growing up, and this was in Louisville, the police department had a program called Meet Officer Friendly.
Yes, sir.
They would have police officers come to the school and talk with us. See, the whole idea of officer friendly. Now, again, with parents who have this idea that their children are perfect, law-abiding citizens, they need to have a wake-up call. If you know your, every parent should know their child, if you know your child is involved in criminal activity, don't make the police the enemy. Your child has made a choice that this is going to be their behavior. The police are not the enemy, but then the police got to learn how to show themselves more friendly. See, we need an officer friendly program in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, when Officer Perry Wren got killed, I remember doing the investigation when they were giving out certain information. The AK-47 that Major Davis used to kill the policeman with, the mama bought the gun.
Yeah.
And then she turned around and said, if he had stayed in the car, he wouldn't have got shot. See, we got, too many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if the officer had stayed in the car, he wouldn't have got shot. Mm-hmm. But never taking responsibility that you bought the gun that your son used to kill him. So I talk on two sides of that. Now, we get outraged. We get outraged when the police kills a citizen, armed or unarmed. We get outraged. But we should have the same outrage when a citizen kills a policeman. Now, the other thing we got to deal with is we got to deal with don't snitch. People live in these crime-ridden areas. They got to get out past their fears. And I tell people, this is part of my story. I had two brothers and two sisters, and we were all 2 years apart. So sometimes when we would be disobedient, and my mom and dad wanted to know who did wrong, we decided that we were going to go in solidarity and wasn't going to tell. So my mom and dad said, okay, well, since ain't nobody going to tell, all y'all going to get whipped. So after a couple of those, I told my brothers and sisters, I said, I'm not taking it. No more whippings for y'all. If you don't want me to tell it, don't do it around me.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, the whole community gets wounded and injured because somebody knows something, but they choose not to tell it. We got to get past that.
Exactly. We have the email back with us now. We're down to our last 5 minutes here, Dr. King. We're going to invite the email back in and get some closing comments and words with him and yourself. Email, are you there? Email, I'm sorry, here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, then. I was letting the doctor know we was down to our last 4 minutes. We were going to get some comments, invite you back in, get some comments from you and him to close out the show.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, it's an honor to have him with us today. I'm hoping that Dr. El-Hadid had called in. I'm not sure if he's on the line or not. He has written a wonderful book. It's all about Dr. King and Malcolm X. And Dr. Hadid, are you on by chance?
Yes. I've been trying to queue up, but no one would pick up.
Oh, did you push number one?
Yeah, I did push one. It's the third, fourth time I pushed it. This is the third, fourth time I pressed one. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. I had to apologize after the last 5 minutes.
No problem.
Tell us about the book that you wrote, please.
Okay. I co-authored a book with a Martin Luther King scholar by the name of Dr. Lewis Baldwin. He's a retired professor from Vanderbilt, and for many years I was.
I know Lewis well. I know Lewis well.
Yeah. We co-authored a book entitled "Between Cross and Crescent: Christian and Muslim Perspective on Malcolm and Martin." And so this was the first time, you know, that a Muslim and a Christian actually got together and co-authored a book. Now, the book that came before that was Jane Cone's book, Malcolm Martin in America, Dream or Nightmare, but it was just written by a Christian, right? The question I want to ask you, brother, is why is it that Martin Luther King refused to debate with Malcolm? He refused to enter into a coalition with him? He refused to organize with him? Because most of his movement was a coalition. I mean, he coalesced with organized labor. He coalesced with Jews, with Catholics, with the sanitation workers. But every time Malcolm tried to get him to work with him, he just either had a reason not to do it, he invited him to debate. So can you tell us from what you know why he didn't really want to get close to Malcolm? And then Malcolm went to Selma to try to talk with him in the while he was in jail. I mean, if you saw the movie Selma, and I think Malcolm was misrepresented there because he just had like a cameo presentation. But Malcolm actually spoke at Selma, and he pretty much reiterated some of the things he said in his speech that he gave and message to the grassroots. He was talking about the House Negro, the other Negro. But, you know,
because we have about a literal 1 minute left. I do apologize. Go ahead, Dr. King.
Okay.
I'm going to make my answer short. I appreciate the question. I'm not being facetious or condescending.
Okay.
One of the things I've chosen not to do over the years is to answer or even attempt to answer questions about what would Dr. King do, what would Dr. King say in light of the times now. My answer is I don't know, because he's dead. And I try to stay out of, there are two minds I try to stay out of. I try to stay out of God's mind, and I try to stay out of Martin Luther King's mind, because he's not here to speak for himself.
Okay, well, I appreciate and respect that, but, I mean, you know, I respect that.
Yes, sir. Dr. Hadid, what have been some of the responses to your book? What kind of feedback have you received?
Well, we've gotten excellent responses because, you know, a lot of our people are literally between the cross and the crescent. You know, the African-American males don't go to church anymore. They don't really relate to, you know, going to church. They lean more toward Islam, But at the same time, you know, they can't accept the moral discipline that comes with it. They don't want to give up their vices and the promise
yes,
here.
Sir.
But if they could get past
yes,
that,
sir.
They would become Muslims. You know what I mean? They,
yes, sir.
But when you go to the churches are predominantly female. Okay,
yes,
and the brothers today, for example, they're at home watching, you know, Miami and watching basketball game, watching football game. Somehow or another, they're giving up on the church. It's rare to find a church that has a large number of African American men. I'm talking about boys and men. The churches
yes,
are predominantly female, and
okay,
that's something
let me see
we
if I,
need to look at.
Right. Well, let me see if I can get this caller in. We have a caller from.
Okay.
717. Area code, you have a call? You have a call
yes, this is Brother Alameen again. But since I would like to know, like right now, I'm trying to get the names of the authors of the book and how can I get the book. The name is Cross and Crescent?
It's called Between Cross and Crescent.
Okay.
A Christian and Muslim Perspective on Malcolm and Martin. The authors are Lewis Baldwin, and my name is Amiri Al-Hadid. And,
will you spell your name?
Amiri, A-M-I-R-I.
A-M-I-R-I.
Yeah, Al-Hadid, A-L.
A-L.
Uh-huh, hyphen, capital H-A-D-I-D.
H-A-D-I-D. I-D.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
and it's universal. University of Florida Press. He published in 2002.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe we can pick this up again because we have a lot to cover. And
okay.
Dr. Hadid, for some reason, that your when you pushed the queue, it didn't show up for some reason. Now, the last caller, this call from 717, they showed up, but for some reason, your number began with 615. It didn't show up. Period.
Oh,
I just
okay.
hit it because I said, "Well, it has to be him because it's a Nashville number." But
right.
we are at the end of our show. Dr. King, I want to thank you for taking time out to be with us and sharing with us. I really enjoyed the conversation and the piece of history that I didn't know. I'm sure the majority of our listeners. Did not know either.
Well, as Dr. Hadid just said, I give it, we need to improve conversations between the crescent and the sickle and the cross and the mosque and the sanctuary. Got to do a little bit better with finding time to talk to each other because we all serve one God, and we call to serve humanity. And
yes,
we still got some generations to save.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's
and next
very
time,
much
needed. Let me say this: when next time you want to do a show and just let somebody run their mouth, you can call me.
Yes, sir. Now, well, you don't run more than run your mouth, but you ran up our thinking ability as well. But I think right now we may be off of the air, but it's still for those who are listening. You know, we say thank you for calling in and being with us, and thank you for listening. And we invite you to tune in next week to Words Made People. I'm your host, Mike Mustahir, and Brother Mustafa, co-host.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum to my
sister. Wa alaikum salam.
Alaykum as-salam, and we will end with our theme. Okay, you have been listening to Words Made People. That was a pre-recorded program from 6 years ago, and I do see some people who had a comment or question. I will try to take those comments and questions at this time. Call us from 773. You're live today. This is today, January 16th. 2022, you were listening to a six-year-old broadcast, but you have a comment or question, please. It's 773. Okay, we come back to them. Caller from 520.
Thanks for calling Works Made People. Can you give us your first name in your city, please, and your comment or question? 520? 520. Okay. Well, I guess they've been on hold so long they probably gave up. 520?
520. Can you hear me?
Yes,
my
sir.
Name is
can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
You're going in and out. You said your name is who?
My name is Madee Abdul Akbar. I'm in Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, it's
I can
honor
hear
and
you. You're going in and you're going out. But go ahead.
It's an honor and pleasure to hear you come this morning. But for Dr. King, Derek, and the family, may the peace and blessing of Allah forever be with them. And Brother Mikhail, would you please submit all the information of the program, because you know I'm about as military, babe, and things go off and on. And I greatly appreciate all the guests this morning. May the peace and blessing of Allah be with each and every one of you. But yesterday I had a conversation about that same issue, so I need that tape that was played today so I can go back tomorrow, because it's Christian and different religions. We talk every day, so I can show them acted what I said yesterday, and Allah made it manifest this morning by hearing Derek King, you, and the other people speak the truth. And I want to present that to
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
Now,
when you say the tape, you mean the entire show?
Yeah, I want the show. I want to hear what the Dr. King said. I want to play it to the people, the will of Allah. When I get it, I want to let them listen.
Yeah, they can go online and listen to it. When this show goes off, it's going to be recorded. And
okay,
you can listen to it. I have to send you the link.
Okay, do that.
So
what I do,
I'll send you a text that has the information on it, and then you can guess that text will have a link in it, and that link will take you to the here of the program.
Yes, sir. And brother, prayers for Brother Iman, your co-host in Los Angeles. He was, I understand I had, he was in the hospital the other day, so keep him in your prayers.
Yes. Yes, so yeah, I talked to him earlier, so, but I'm going to give him a call again. You're right, keep our brother, your member. Iman Abdul Majid from Los Angeles, California. Keep him in your duas, in your prayers.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalam. Yes, thank you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, we go back to another caller here. This is from 574. Caller from 574. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. I believe.
Yes, thanks for calling Works Made People.
But I believe everybody should just get together a little bit and just talk, okay? All right.
I think
the problem with the world here is that we just get too divided. That's what I believe it is. You know who drives that? It ain't us. It's not you, and it's not you, Kunti Kente, and it's not me, right? It's just what we get a little bit divided. That's all it is. All we got to do is
I agree.
Talk.
That's right.
Willis.
You know,
we talk a little bit, and you know where else? We got the same color pillows. I got pillows all over my house, and it's confusing to me. We just need to talk a little bit, right? So if we can find a big issue, so what's your biggest problem? Are you upset that you keep getting arrested for carjacking? Is that why you're upset?
Yes, sir.
Well, stop carjacking. So there's my conversation. So what's your side of it? I want to hear why you got to go carjack and go in there and just do all those things because you're poor. You know how many poor white people there are in this world? A shit ton more than you think, man. So that's not an excuse. You can't use economics as an excuse. So we're going to get to the brass
tacks
here, right? Right? You can't use that because...
I agree.
Okay. So what do you do about it?
Let me just say this here before I go to my next caller, that I agree with you. We have to talk. I'm sorry?
I said, okay, so let's talk to your next caller in a minute. That's what I said.
Oh, okay, yes, sir. Yeah, but thank you for calling and thank you for listening. We really appreciate it very much.
Hey, wait a minute, boy, I got you all.
What city you call from?
Montgomery, Alabama. That's where I'm from, right here. This side
Montgomery.
Of the head. You know why that in Alabama has one leg shorter than the other leg? You know why that? It's mountains. You live on the side of one mountain. Well, word, if you live on the side and you can't keep going up and down and making the moonshine, and you can't keep doing that, eventually one leg is going to be disproportionate to the other. That's all it is out there.
Okay, well... Ask
the Chinese guy.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, all right. And we have to let him keep going. Caller from 773, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam, buddy man.
Let me just say real quick. I think you may know. That was a program from 6 years ago, but it was still timely, so I played it.
Yeah, it was very timely. I had never heard that one before. Very significant tape, and especially the clips that you played from Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes, sir.
Coming during that period of time, especially in the Nation of Islam, there was a difference. I don't want to use the word opinion, but there was different viewpoints on Dr.
methodology.
King's approach.
Would that work?
yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know, approach.
Mm-hmm.
As a young man, too, at that time, and adhering to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's approach and Dr. King's approach at that time, I didn't have the respect. I say I lost the respect for Dr. King. But when Imam Warti Muhammad came in the office and enlightened us, I have great high respect for Dr. King. In fact, I think that African Americans, even those who adhere to Dr. King's theology, don't have the kind of respect that we should have. Great man. Was he in?
Yes, sir.
And my intent is to study him even more. But in that clip that I think the last clip that I heard, what I heard in there something that Imam Wadi Muhammad pressed to us when he was saying that, these emancipation proclamations and all of these other things are not going to free the African American or put him in the position that he needs to be in. He has to develop that content in himself. And I thought that was very significant. So I thank you for playing it again, and I will listen to it again.
Yes, sir.
I came in on it late. But very, very great.
Thank you.
Insights for it. Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you. And also, in particular, for those of us who are students of Imam Muhammad, study the last collected Juma Kubba he gave to us in Detroit a few weeks before he passed away. And in that Juma in Detroit, it'd be Labor Day weekend of 2008, he spoke highly of Dr. King during Juma. Mm-hmm. So we have to be mindful of that. And just on a personal tip, this is just a Michael Sahir brain thinking. I said, why did Allah permit that to be in the last Juma of Imam Muhammad to our collective community? You know, maybe there's nothing to it, but in my mind, I'm like, everything's its own time and everything is for a reason. And that happened. You know, Imam Muhammad talked about Christ's love and Dr. King in the last Juma
for our community. Just something just to ponder. So thank you, Brother Assad. I got one or two more callers here that have been on hold because I don't have the ability to tell people during a repeat show, this is a repeat show, and they are calling in thinking it's live. So I got two more people on here who I want to get to who may have a comment. I just wanted to just not recognize them for listening to the show today. But
yes, thank you.
But thank you very much. Alhamdulillah. Appreciate you. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Okay. We got this another caller from 773. I'm going to try them again and see if I can get them. Caller from 773-892. You have a question or comment on the show today, the program today. Okay. Well, I tried them twice. I think I've gotten everybody where I need to get to today. So we thank you for tuning in for Words Made People. I got about 15 minutes left. So I'm just going to play some Muslim songs for about 15 minutes. Brother Assad, I know you're on pause, but you may remember this song. This is a song here. Let me see. Can I find it? Yeah. I'm going to bring your brother Assad back on for a minute.
Yes, sir.
Brother Assad, yeah, remember remember the fish song came out? There was some made by some brothers in L.A., but it was supporting the Whiting H&G program.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to play this song, but I guess for those who are listening or who may listen later on, you remember selling that fish, don't you? The white H&G, the 10-pound
yes,
blocks?
Right, yes.
You know, I was down in Nashville, Tennessee one summer, and the brother came down there, suit and tie, bow tie, and he got his fish. And he went to a lady's house, right? And she said, "How much is the fish?" And he told her, and she said, "Oh, I can't afford that much. I can't afford half of it." And then the brothers, I guess you all had a technique. He hit that 10-pound block of fish and put it right down the middle, you know, and sold her what she needed. But that Whiting H&G program was really special. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play this song here.
We had brothers that were very creative, you know, they had their swag and for their particular approach. But just let me say this right quick.
Yes, sir.
Those sisters that I was at Salam Restaurant one time, they had nothing but Whiting H&G. Some of that Whiting H&G tastes like chicken. They was making pizza out of it. You ever had a pizza fish?
The Seaboat?
You know?
No, I had that
They were so creative with that fish. It just brought the creativity that we have in us out of us. And they made everything out of that Whiting H&G fish. I just wanted to bring that little tidbit to it.
Well, yeah, thank you, because I bet you said that, because we need to talk about this for those who don't know what we're speaking about. That the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he created a fish program. I think it was the name of it, called the Fish Program. Brother Nader Ali, and he's still doing well. He's in his 90s. He's out there in California now. I think he was the one that was really had the main hands on the program. But literally millions of pounds of fish were imported to Peru. And from California to New York. Matter of fact, they had H.K. Hassan and his group, they got some semi-trucks to carry the fish up and down the West Coast. That's how much fish was imported by the Nation of Islam during that time period. So I just want to just add that in, because I think that's one thing we need to share with our Muslim youth, some of the details of the history because they hear us talk about this and that from the old days, but it's not always in the context to where they can appreciate it. So let me go ahead and just play this song. This song was put out by the New Creation. I think Wale Ali singing this song too. Yeah, he is. And you go online and you can see a YouTube of this as well. It's by the New Creation called The Fish Soul. They talk about the fish brought in by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Some beautiful brothers the other day, they was looking good.
Oh yeah, what was they doing?
They was going all through the neighborhood selling Viking H&G fish and making a happy sound.
Oh yeah?
This.
We're in your neighborhood with your fish today. Yeah, 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 yeah. We're in your neighborhood with your fish today. Yeah, 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 yeah. We're in your neighborhood with your fish.
Yes, sir. That was in your neighborhood. Fish for you, said Muhammad's on time. Brother Asai, you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, do you remember that song?
You know, I don't.
You don't? Oh, I think it was a West Coast song. Because they had a song on the...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, please.
No. I didn't have it. No, I don't remember that song, but it's a very good song.
Yes, sir. Yeah, because like the words, I'm not sure how clear it was on your end. Mine was a little fuzzy, but it says, you know, we in your neighborhood with this fish today. It said, Muhammad is on time. You know, so bring your fish to you right from Peru. You know, so alhamdulillah.
And I think the brothers used to use that used that phraseology too when they were selling the fish. I think they used to use that a little bit when they were coming. Yeah, when they knock on somebody's door, you know. I have the fish from you, straight from Peru.
That's right.
Muhammad's own temple.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. Okay.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
What it kind of expressed to me is the spirit. You know, I'm feeling that spirit now. We need spirit along with knowledge.
Yes, sir.
And sometimes if you lose the spirit, you know, if you get up in the morning and don't have the spirit, it's hard to get things done. You know, but if you got the spirit comes first and then knowledge. You know, and you got a terrific combination for success.
Well, I think that's what it says in Genesis, right? It says, when there's something moving upon the face of the water, the face of the dog or something like that.
Yes.
You had that spirit first, and then came the light.
So we had a lot of spirit during that period of time. We may have been lacking in knowledge.
Sir.
With the Imam coming in, we got a lot of knowledge. But we may have lost some spirit. So we need that balance. Right. Yeah.
We need that balance. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, so and we're going to get there. Matter of fact, I think we're there. We just got to wake up to it and just do what we got to do. So if we can't stop now, this is our turn. This is our day.
Yes.
And we don't want to miss it. You only get one day. This is our turn. Praise be to Allah. But thank you. Inshallah, we'll be on next week with another topic. And we'll close out with our theme song. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
People, every day, trying to do things their own way. But everything you see, touch, smell, those are things that tell you words to think twice before you step on your advice. Make sure your words hold true, cause people hold you to your words. They make people, and people, they make the world go round. Words make people. Check out the words that make your world. If your words are jive, then jive you are. Cause those type of words, they don't go far. Think and start, word can buy. From ideas deep in your mind, it's words that make people. And people that make the world go round. Words make people. Check out the words that make your mind. Check out the words that make your world. If your words are good, then good.
you'll be, cause those kind of words that set you free. When thinking starts, words come back from ideas deep in your mind. You need words to make people, and people to make the world go round. Words that make people. Thank you WD for setting me free with words.